I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's May 23rd, and we have a lot to talk about. Believe it or not, and I'm probably the person who finds this most hard to believe, but this is episode number 299 of Real Talk MS. That means that next week, we're looking at episode number 300, which is a milestone that I never could have imagined when we started out. So I'll save all the thanks for next week, but I hope each of you knows how much I appreciate your continued engagement. Of course, I'm grateful that by choosing to listen, you've put Real Talk MS among the top 1% of the more than 5 million podcasts that are out there. But I'm even more appreciative that so many of you choose to participate. I love getting your emails and DMs, and I still do my best to reply to all of them. I'll admit that there are weeks when I get a lot of emails, so if you haven't heard back from me, please be patient. And just for the record, I'm not a doctor. I don't even play one on a podcast. So if you're emailing or messaging me requesting a medical opinion, you have the wrong guy. Please be sure to direct those kinds of questions to your neurologist or MS specialist. They're the experts. I also want to remind you that this is the final week for you to participate in the Real Talk MS Listener Survey. I'm always interested in learning more about you guys because when I have a clear idea of who's listening to the podcast, it's easier to plan content that I know you're going to care about and be interested in. So I'm inviting you to spend less than 5 minutes taking the Real Talk MS Listener Survey. And to add a little motivation to this invitation, once you complete the survey, you can choose to be entered into a drawing for a $100 Amazon gift card. To get to the survey, just visit realtalkms.com/survey. And to make it even easier to get to the survey, you'll find that link in today's show notes. So I hope you'll do this small favor for me, complete the survey, and maybe win a $100 Amazon gift card. As I promised in last week's podcast episode, today we're taking a look at the just-published results of a study that provides a more granular estimate of the prevalence of MS in the United States, analyzing the prevalence of MS by race, ethnicity, age, sex, and geographic region. And walking us through that data is one of my favorite guests, the National MS Society's Executive Vice President of Research, Dr. Bruce Bebo. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Bebo, there are a few other things that you should know about. There are a couple of events coming up that you should definitely know about, and I want to make sure you have all the details about each of them. On June 14th and 15th, between 1 and 4 p.m. Eastern Time, the National MS Society is hosting the 2023 Black MS Experience Summit. Feelings of isolation and invisibility are pervasive in the Black MS community. Many people struggle to feel seen, heard, and get the support they need to live their best lives. So this year's summit is focused on resisting invisibility and embracing identity. This event provides an outstanding opportunity to hear from the healthcare experts, share your story, amplify your voice, and build connections in the Black MS community. There's no cost for you to participate in the Black MS Experience Summit, and you'll find a link to register in today's show notes. And the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers annual meeting gets underway next week, just outside of Denver, at the Gaylord Rockies Resort and Convention Center in Aurora, Colorado. This is the largest North American meeting for healthcare professionals engaged in MS care, with more than 170 speakers delivering over 330 presentations. And as part of this meeting, on Friday, June 2nd, CanDo MS is offering a day-long program specifically for people living with MS. The program is called More About MS, and if you're in the Denver area, you can participate in More About MS in person. If you're not in or around Denver, you can still participate virtually. You'll learn, practice, and come away with new wellness strategies. You'll hear from experts and get the latest information about coping with some of the most bothersome invisible symptoms of MS, like fatigue, pain, mood, and cognition. You'll find workshops on how to create and work with your healthcare team, how to navigate the DMT maze, staying active together, and how to thrive and survive as a support partner. The in-person program takes place Friday, June 2nd. It begins at 11 a.m. Mountain Time and goes to 4:30 in the afternoon, and that includes a free lunch and happy hour. And the virtual program begins the same day at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and goes until 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And here's the best part. Both the in-person and virtual programs are absolutely free. So whether you plan on participating in person or virtually, you'll find a link to register for what promises to be a great program in today's show notes. By now, most of you know how much I enjoy talking about advocacy. As I've said more than a few times, I think advocating on behalf of your own interests is one of the most empowering things an individual can do. And while I appreciate the opportunity to talk about any aspect of MS advocacy, I especially like pointing out the wins. Because the wins are a reminder that, besides being a self-empowering activity, advocacy moves the needle. It drives real change. And I'll admit, many of those societal changes don't happen overnight. Sometimes being an MS activist is about learning to play the long game. But sometimes changes can happen pretty quickly. So today I want to share an advocacy win. In September 2022, the National MS Society submitted comments to the Centers for Medicare Services, urging them to consider evidence in support of the medical necessity of seat elevation devices for power wheelchairs in helping individuals living with MS to continue to maintain their independence and their dignity. In these comments, the Society shared recent scientific evidence showing that these devices minimize the risk of developing repetitive stress injuries from wheelchair use, and that the devices provided psychological benefits as they allowed an individual to participate in eye-to-eye conversation. Then, just a couple of months ago, the Society submitted additional comments thanking the Centers for Medicare Services for their preliminary decision to cover seat elevation in Group 3 power wheelchairs, while urging the Centers for Medicare Services to consider extending these benefits to Group 2 power wheelchair users. And for the first time, the Center for Medicare Services determined that seat elevation in power wheelchairs is considered primarily medical in nature. That's very important language because that means these devices are covered durable medical equipment under both traditional Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Seat elevation will be covered in groups 2, 3, and 5 complex rehabilitative technology or CRT power wheelchairs when a patient needs seat elevation to transfer from one surface to another with or without caregiver assistance, or to utilize assistive devices and lift equipment, or to improve one's reach, or to perform other mobility-related tasks. Seat elevation will also be covered in non-CRT power wheelchairs once it's determined by a Medicare contractor to be reasonable and necessary. In these cases, individuals will first undergo a specialty evaluation performed by a licensed, certified medical professional who has specific training and experience in rehabilitative wheelchair evaluations. If you're on Medicare and you're pursuing coverage for a power chair with seat elevation, please be sure to reach out to your healthcare provider about this. And by the way, if you're not on Medicare, I want to point out that very often, private medical insurance will take its cues from what the Centers for Medicare Services approve under Medicare. So there may be good news for an even larger population. This is a major win for anyone who may use a power wheelchair now or in the future. Their lives literally just got a little better. And at the end of the day, that's the whole point of advocacy, to use public policy as a means of improving the quality of life for people living with MS. And I'll take this opportunity to remind you that you can become an MS activist and help drive the changes in public policy that end up making a difference in people's lives. Just visit nationalmssociety.org/advocacy, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. We know that multiple sclerosis has no respect for geographic boundaries. It affects people everywhere. And so acknowledging the impact of MS on individuals and families in the United Arab Emirates, the UAE recently launched their own MS Society in Abu Dhabi. The UAE has a population of about 9.3 million people, and as of 2022, they counted about 2,000 people living with MS, although the actual number is thought to be more than double that. And so one of the projects that the new MS Society is investing in is a national MS registry to better understand the true prevalence of MS in the UAE. Like every MS society, the MS Society in the UAE is focused on raising awareness of MS, building a holistic ecosystem for MS care, providing resources for people who are affected by MS in the UAE, and supporting global efforts to develop cures for MS. In fact, Dr. Rukia Mir, a neurologist at the Abu Dhabi Stem Cell Center, was a participant at the recent Pathways to Cures Global Summit. We don't often hear about multiple sclerosis in many Middle Eastern countries, so I think that this MS Society has a real opportunity to not only provide support for people affected by MS in the UAE, but to remind the rest of the world that MS is a global disease. I'm also looking forward to hearing more about the MS research that they're going to be supporting. If you'd like to learn more about the MS Society in the UAE, you can visit www.nationalmssociety.ae, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Problems with balance are common among people living with MS, and balance issues can lead to falls. They can impact mobility. They can get in the way of living your life. Research has shown that rehabilitation therapy can help you better manage those balance issues, and there's been growing interest among rehabilitation specialists in determining whether virtual reality training can be helpful in managing MS-related balance issues. And before we get to the research, I want to point out that virtual reality falls into one of two categories: immersive virtual reality and non-immersive virtual reality. Immersive virtual reality involves putting on a headset that provides a 360-degree view of a computer-generated environment. Most of the popular virtual reality games on the market today take advantage of immersive virtual reality. Non-immersive virtual reality involves interacting with a computer-generated environment that you're viewing on a TV, phone, or monitor screen. The kinds of games played on gaming consoles, like a PlayStation or an Xbox, take advantage of non-immersive virtual reality. A research team in Spain wanted to determine whether using virtual reality to manage MS-related balance issues produced any benefits. So they conducted a meta-analysis of 19 studies that were published over the past decade. Now, a meta-analysis is a study that pools data from multiple studies that have already been published and analyzes that data collectively. These 19 studies involved 858 people with MS, and most of the studies focused on non-immersive forms of virtual reality, comparing people with MS with a control group or a group of healthy people who were matched to the people with MS by age and gender. The results of this meta-analysis show that virtual reality rehabilitation was effective in improving balance among people with MS. The Berg Balance Scale measures a person's ability to balance while they're doing a series of predefined activities, like standing or reaching forward. And the cumulative analysis of these 19 studies showed that among people with MS, the Berg Balance Score increased 3 points following virtual reality rehabilitation. The best Berg Balance Scale outcomes were the result of virtual reality sessions lasting between 40 and 45 minutes, given 5 times a week over 8 weeks for a total of 40 sessions. The best improvement in dynamic balance, or balance while you're moving, were the result of receiving 20 to 25 minute virtual reality sessions twice weekly for a total number of sessions that fell somewhere between 8 and 19. The meta-analysis also showed that virtual reality rehabilitation training improved an individual's confidence in their balance and lessened their fear of falling, but the training did not have any effect on their walking speed itself. As the technology continues to evolve, we're sure to see more research and more rehabilitation treatment involving virtual reality. And if you'd like to review the details of this particular study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about the prevalence of MS in the United States with Dr. Bruce Bibo, the MS Society's Executive Vice President of Research. And as Dr. Bibo points out at the beginning of our conversation, prevalence is sometimes confused with or mistakenly lumped together with incidence. Prevalence refers to the number of people who are living with a disease at a specific point in time. And incidence is the occurrence of new cases of a disease in a given population over a specific amount of time. And a recently published population-based study shows that the incidence of multiple sclerosis in the United Kingdom has remained relatively constant for almost 20 years. In this study, the research team analyzed anonymous electronic health records from 22 million people in the UK. The team was focused on identifying the 19 most common autoimmune diseases in the UK, and MS was one of them. They discovered that between the years 2000 and 2019, 15,634 people out of this sample of 22 million were diagnosed with MS. Most people were diagnosed between the ages of 36 and 56, with women being 2.3 times more likely to be diagnosed with MS compared to men. And the researchers also observed that the rate of diagnosis of new cases, that is, the incidence of MS, didn't change very much from year to year. Those are the facts as you'll see them reflected in the study itself. Now I'd like to add a couple of observations. When I saw this constant, relatively unchanging incidence rate, my first thought was that this study may offer greater insight into healthcare systems and healthcare access than it does MS. And I say that because here's what we know in the United States. We know that with greater access to MRI scanners, MS has become easier to diagnose. And we know that today, more people are being diagnosed with MS at a younger age than ever before. In the U.S., the average age of onset is closer to 34, and the average window for diagnosing MS is usually stated as between 20 and 40 years old. Now, that doesn't mean that children aren't diagnosed with MS. Unfortunately, we know that they are. And it also doesn't mean that people who age well beyond 40 don't get diagnosed with MS. We also know that to be true. But when we're talking about median averages, a range of 36 to 56 seems high, at least for the United States. And the idea that today more people aren't getting an accurate MS diagnosis than they were 20 years ago, well, that's equally surprising. So does this apparent discrepancy between what we experience in the U.S. and what's been measured in the U.K. mean that MS impacts people in one country differently than the other? I don't think so. Instead, I think that people in the U.S. and the U.K. access their healthcare systems differently, and those healthcare systems, well, they behave differently. I'm guessing that could lead to receiving a later diagnosis in the UK than you might in the United States. To be honest, when it comes to discussing research, I'm rarely comfortable sharing personal observations. It's just that in sharing the results of this particular study, I thought it was important to put those results into some sort of context that might explain what we know to be different in the US. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. While we're talking about the incidence of MS in the UK, it seems like an ideal time to slightly switch gears and talk about the prevalence of MS in the United States. And joining me to walk us through some of the details of a study funded by the National MS Society that focused on analyzing the prevalence of MS by race, ethnicity, age, sex, and geographic region is the Society's Executive Vice President of Research, Dr. Bruce Bebo. In last week's episode of the podcast, we talked briefly about the newly published results of a study funded by the National MS Society that estimated the prevalence of multiple sclerosis in the United States. This study looked at the prevalence of MS by race, ethnicity, age, sex, and geographic region. And I promised you that in this week's podcast episode, we take a deeper dive into what the research team learned. And who better to take us on that deep dive than the MS Society's Executive Vice President of Research, Dr. Bruce Bebo. Welcome back to the podcast, Bruce.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you.
I always like to start conversations about research by getting our definitions out of the way. So what do we mean when we talk about prevalence?
Right. So there are two concepts here that are in this paper, and that's prevalence and incidence. So prevalence, it's really the number of cases of any specific disease, in this case, MS, in a population at a particular point in time or over a specific period of time. So this is the proportion of people that are living with that condition in a particular period of time. The other concept to be aware of is incidence. This is the rate of new cases. So when you hear something, John, like there's a new case of cancer diagnosed every 2 hours or something like that. That's the incidence. That's the rate of new diagnosis of any particular condition.
A few years ago, in 2019, the results of a society-funded study were published, and that study estimated the prevalence of MS in the United States to be nearly 1 million people, which turned out to be more than twice as many people as had previously been thought to be living with MS. So how did this study come about, and what's different about it compared to the 2019 study?
Yeah, so that initial study in 2019 didn't have the capacity to and resourcing to develop an estimate of the prevalence of MS in different geographies within the United States or within different racial and ethnic populations within the United States. So we felt like those were two very important questions to answer, and we deployed resources to a stellar team of epidemiologists, some of whom worked on the previous prevalence estimate, to estimate the prevalence of MS in different geographies within the United States, as well as in different racial and ethnic groups.
So I'd like to circle back to the geography issue in just a moment, but I'm curious, what did we learn about the prevalence of MS within specific racial or ethnic groups?
Sure. So let me tell you a little bit about the methodology without geeking out too much. So the team evaluated 3 years worth of health insurance claims data from 96 million adults that are either covered through Medicare or Medicaid, covered through their military, or covered through private insurance plans. They used the same methodology to identify cases of MS in these databases that were used in the 2019, the paper that was published in 2019 that you mentioned earlier. And to the extent possible, and that's an important qualifier here, to the extent possible, they estimated the prevalence of MS among different races and ethnicities living in specific regions in the United States. And why at that point possible, John, is that race and ethnicity information is not captured consistently or accurately, honestly, in these different databases, it takes a fair amount of imputation, of extrapolation, of looking very carefully at that data to be able to extract this information, because it's not collected routinely and in the same way amongst those different databases. So that was the tricky part of this. But the prevalence rates were reported, and the epidemiologists like to report this as a rate. And this is the number of people per 100,000 people living in the United States. So white people, and in this case, the definition does not include Latinx or Hispanic. The study showed that were about 375 people per 100,000. That's about 4 out of 1,000 people in the white community. And the Black community, again, excluding Hispanic and Latinx, there were just about 300 cases per 100,000. So that's about 3 per 1,000. And then people of other races. So this is where it gets difficult, because these races and ethnicities aren't called out specifically in different databases. So there was this sort of lumping. So this category includes Asians, Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, multi-rate individuals, and people where the race or ethnicity were just unknown. So it's kind of a big pot there. That was about 200 people per 100,000. So that's about 2 out of 1,000. And then in the Hispanic Latinx people, they found 161 approximately out of 100,000. So that's about 1.5 persons per 1,000 in that race ethnic group that have MS.
I noticed that gender or sexual orientation weren't included in this study. Was there a specific reason for that?
So sex is included in the study. And so the study authors did report the sex difference between males and females in getting MS, and reported that to be about 2.9 women to one man gets MS. So that 1-to-3 ratio is about what's been reported in a lot of literature that preceded this. So it's more or less consistent with that. But the concept of gender and gender identity, again, those that's not information that's captured in a consistent way in different databases, and it makes it very, very hard to get at that.
So what did we learn about what I'll call the geography of MS in America? Were there any geographic patterns that stood out?
Yeah, so we've known for some time that there's this geographic distribution around the world of MS, with MS being more common in northern latitudes than in southern latitudes. And that was documented again by the authors of this study, where they looked at bands of latitude across the United States, and they saw higher prevalence of MS in northern latitudes compared to southern latitudes. I can anticipate your next question, which would be, you know, why do we see that gradient? And I don't think we really know the answer to that. There's been, of course, speculation that it might have to do with sunlight exposure and vitamin D. And we've talked about that on this program before, the low vitamin D being a risk factor for MS. It points out, of course, that there are environmental influences and risk factors associated with MS. And it may point out to there being a gradient of these risk factors from southern latitudes to northern latitudes. So a very important question that remains mostly unanswered.
So within these geographic bands, were there any particular states that stood out in terms of MS prevalence?
Again, there's a higher prevalence of MS in the farther north that you get within the United States. So states like the New England area has a high prevalence of MS, in Vermont and New Hampshire and Maine. The northern central part of the United States, North Dakota, for example, and Montana have very high prevalence of MS, as do Washington and Oregon. So those northern states and those northern latitudes have a higher prevalence of MS. There's plenty of MS, unfortunately, that exists in other states as well, but it's a clue to us what some of the environmental factors and triggers might be that are triggering MS.
Does the study tell us whether MS is becoming more prevalent in the United States?
That would relate more to incidence, right? So is the incidence changing? Think of this like the illustration that epidemiologists like to use is like a bathtub. So you're filling the bathtub and you're also draining the bathtub at the same time. So the incidence is that flow of water going into the bathtub, and the prevalence is the water level in the bathtub. So prevalence may go up, but that's because people are living longer, they are on disease-modifying therapies, and they're having better outcomes. Doesn't necessarily mean the incidence or the amount of water flowing into the bathtub is getting any greater. So there doesn't really seem, overall, to seem to be a change in the incidence, except I will share there was a paper that was published a few years ago by a group looking at data from the Kaiser system in Southern California that showed the incidence of MS was going up in the Black community. Now, I don't think this means that people from that community are getting MS more. I think it's that we're being able to diagnose MS more in that community. And it goes to why this paper is so important. For so many years, I've been studying MS for decades, and I followed the literature, which at the time suggested that MS was primarily a Northern European Caucasian disease. And this is what we said for decades. And that is simply not the case. And part of that really had to do with biases and where that where those studies that developed those prevalence estimates were performed. And so I think MS has been underdiagnosed, particularly in the African-American community. And I think one of the most important things this paper does is it creates awareness that anybody can get MS, that it's not a disease that's primarily of Northern European ancestry, and that the change in incidence, my suspicion is, in the African-American community is related to more awareness that anyone can get MS. And I'll share that I think we have to look at the data that this paper reports in the Hispanic community and in that other category, which included Asian populations, with a bit of a grain of salt, because we may be having the same sort of attribution bias, this bias around diagnosing MS because of this concept that the medical and healthcare community has had for so many years. So we're going to keep a close eye on this, John, and hopefully this paper and others will create more awareness in the healthcare provider community, those people who are diagnosing MS. And I think we just want to be cautious about the numbers from other ethnicities and races, because we may be undercounting them for the reasons that I shared.
You know, I was just about to ask you, how does the evidence that we can take from this study get leveraged? And certainly you've answered it in terms of healthcare. And beyond healthcare, I think there's also a public policy piece to this as well. This certainly speaks to an equitable allocation of resources that are needed to support people with MS.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that the headline for me here, John, is that anyone can develop MS. And this information is critical to the healthcare providers so that there's this awareness that MS isn't just a Northern European Caucasian disease, that anyone, regardless of your age or your ethnicity or your sex assigned at birth, that MS can strike anybody. And I think that's the biggest positive benefit from this paper, John, is that it elevates the awareness amongst policymakers, as you shared, amongst healthcare providers, and amongst anyone that can help change the lives of the over a million people in the United States living with MS. I'm pretty excited about the impact that this work's going to have.
Dr. Bruce Bebo, as always, thank you for helping us better understand how research like this ultimately makes a difference in the lives of people who are affected by MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, John. And thanks for what you do as well.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/299. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And please remember, this is the last week for you to participate in the Real Talk MS Listener Survey. I'd consider it a personal favor if you could find a spare moment to complete the survey. It'll take you less than 5 minutes, and you could win a $100 Amazon gift card. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.